example, in 1994, the annual bingo handle collectively was $86 million in the state of Oregon, and in 2000 it has dropped to $66 million. Therefore, our office is not in opposition of House Bill 2009 in its amended form. And I'm available for questions.
Senator Corcoran.
Yeah, Mr. Chair. So this only applies to charitable organizations?
Yes, sir. Nonprofit organizations.
Nonprofit
organizations, those that are tax exempt under the Federal Internal Revenue Service Code. So that would extend beyond charitable organizations to things like fraternal organizations like Elks, Eagles, things like that, associations, school districts, things like that.
And, Mr. Chair, how open do these organizations have to keep their books for the Department of Justice? I mean, do they have to show you their, because you know the handle, they must, you must know in pretty good detail what, how they're paying staff, for instance?
That's correct. The largest licensees, Class A licensees, that would be most impacted by this would be, by this bill, are required to file annual or correction. They're required to file quarterly reports with our office and include a lot of information regarding expenses, prize payouts, and that sort of thing. And they're also subject to periodic review by our gaming inspectors.
Mr. Chair, and do you have any indication that there are nonprofits who pay their executive directors or members of their staff high salaries? That have, I guess I'm looking at the question of, you know, there's this issue of some of these charitables and nonprofits are actually people who are involved in and do quite well.
Our office, the Attorney General, has general oversight responsibility for all charitable organizations that hold, those organizations that hold assets or solicit funds in the state of Oregon. And yes, it's correct. There are some organizations which are under the office's scrutiny for executive director compensation issues, but there are none, there are no gaming licensees that are under the scrutiny of the Department of Justice for those types of issues.
So, I'm sorry, but so I wanted to be clear about what you just said. So you're saying that within this venue, you don't have concerns, but within the broader venue, you do?
Yes, we have about 19,000 charitable organizations that are registered with the with our office that we track and review. And of that, only a small percentage of them hold gaming licenses. And we do not have any open investigations or any issues before our office that raise these sorts of concerns at this time.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, any other questions? Okay, I don't have anyone else signed to testify. Is there anyone who would like to?
Thank you.
With the public hearing. Any wishes? Senator Corcoran?
Pardon?
No, I think I'm okay with it.
Work session.
Mr. Chair?
Senator Decker.
Before he can change his mind, I'm going to move House Bill 2009A in gross to the floor with a do-pass recommendation.
Thank you. Senator Decker moves House Bill 2009 to the floor with a do-pass recommendation. So the discussion.
Well, the only discussion, Mr. Chair, is the discussion I heard about those butterfly ballots in Florida, and they figured that those people had to be crazy not to be able to figure those out because they could keep 15 bingo cards going at a time.
I heard the same thing. Objections to the motion?
My grandmother was a victim of bingo all her life at the Catholic Church in Youngstown, Ohio. It's a horrible, horrible thing to have happen on Thursday nights, but, you know, at least she wasn't playing video poker. Of course, they didn't have video poker then. But otherwise, I guess we better proceed.
No objection. No order. Senator Decker, do you want to carry it?
I think Senator Corcoran should carry it.
I would rather spare the floor of that.
I'm already dressing up like Moses tomorrow. What else do you want from me?
Senator Decker will carry the bell. Close the work. Okay. Public hearing on 2572. Mr. Putman.
Mr. Chairman, current law requires telecommunications utilities that get more than 75% of their income in Oregon. I'll back up. I'll tell you what this bill does rather than what the old law did. If a telecommunications utility gets less than half of its revenue, gross revenue, from sources in Oregon, this bill would no longer require that the Public Utilities Commission authorize them to issue stock or bonds or other securities. Right now, that number is at 75%. This lowers it to 50.
Okay. Shelley Jensen. Shelley here? There she is.
Good afternoon, Chair Beyer and committee members. I'm Shelley Jensen, Regulatory and Governmental Affairs Manager for Verizon. Currently, telecommunications companies must receive approval from the public utilities prior to issuing stock, debt, and certain other financial instruments. The only exception is telecommunications utilities that derive 3/4 of their gross revenues from outside the state of Oregon. This bill would change that to 1/2 of gross revenues from outside the state of Oregon. The PUC would still be able to review these transactions after the fact as part of a rate case. And if telecommunications utilities did not use prudence, or if they used the money for purposes other than those specified in the statute, the PUC could come back and require that the utility go back into the pre-approval mode. There isn't any opposition to this. We actually worked with the PUC to develop this language. A couple reasons that Verizon would like to see the standard go to 1/2 is that would get us out of pre-approval, and the company that would be borrowing from Verizon is Verizon of the Northwest, which is made up of Oregon, Idaho, and Washington, and Oregon is the only state that requires pre-approval. So it kind of causes some problems internally for us. In addition, in some states where we have been required to get pre-approval, we've missed out on getting perhaps the best interest rate. It's sort of like buying a house that if you're not ready, when the interest rate changes, you miss it. And so this way we would be able to be a little bit more flexible in getting better rates, which would benefit both our shareholders and our ratepayers. So I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Okay. Questions?
I have a question.
Senator Atkinson.
Not about the bill, though. It's about Verizon. What cable companies, cable stations, does Verizon own?
10. We're a telephone company.
Isn't there subsidiaries that own cable?
No.
I guess that was my question.
AT&T does.
Yeah. No.
Huh.
Okay.
I think they do, too. I mean, let's be clear about that. What's the relationship between AT&T and Verizon?
We're competitors.
That answers that part of it. You're not going to get very good help from here. I'm trying to make you look good here.
Did you guys run a bingo outfit out of Verizon?
Right. Yeah, at our Beaverton office.
Senator Gorley.
Right. Do we have testimony from the PUC regarding their neutrality on the bill?
We have no one signed up from the PUC to talk by, but someone is here. Someone's here.
Mark Hellman of the Public Utility Commission. And can't recall either neutral or support this bill.
You said can't recall if they're neutral.
I know that we're not opposed. This was taken up a month or two ago in our legislative meetings. And I know I was supportive of it.
Okay, that'll do. Thank you.
Okay.
Mr.
Senator Corcoran.
So what would be the downside, just playing devil's advocate for a minute, of doing this from a PUC standpoint?
Chair, Senator Corcoran, the downside would be that the company would go and issue bonds that might not be the the lowest interest rate possible, and in which case, in a rate case, which is what we do, in a rate case, we would look at it and argue over whether the cost of debt is what's recorded, or maybe they should have exchanged for some lower debts. And it's harder to do it after the fact than the pre-approval, which is what we do now. They come in and they ask for agreement on spreads, and we review it, and then go before the Public Utility Commission. And while that is not taken as rate approval, the commission does have a chance to review those rates before they actually get issued. I think that's might be the one harm I can think of.
Okay, thanks. Any other questions? Thank you. Close public hearing. Work session. House Bill 2572.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 2572 to the floor with a do pass recommendation.
Thank you. Senator Gordon, this House Bill 2572 to the floor with a do pass recommendation. For the discussion, any objection?
Yeah, I'll object.
Senator Corcoran votes no. Anyone else? But ordered. Any volunteers to carry? Mr. Starr, let's carry the bill. Okay. Close the work session. Okay. Let's open a public hearing on House Bill 2775.
Mr. Putman, would you like to describe the bill?
Yes, Madam Chairman, I would.
Can you say everything? Telecommunications.
This bill makes some changes in the authority of credit unions. Notably, it removes the $100,000 limitation on the amount that can be borrowed by a credit union. It also changes the amount of their assets they can have in a stock corporation providing accounting or other services to the credit union. And it removes from the regulator, DCBS, the minimum insurance and surety coverage that they have to have. This bill passed the House with a good margin. But there is a proposed dash two amendment. My SMS says dash one. That's an error. It should be dash A two, which is a three-word change agreed to, I'm told, by both the credit union and the bankers.
Okay. Are there any questions or comments before we hear testimony? Thank you, Mr. Putman. I'd like to call Pam Levitt and Hal Scoggins, representing credit unions.
Hopefully we can find Pam, because
Pam was here.
She was here, and she left. And
she went downstairs to make some copies real quick. She should be back momentarily.
Well, you better pitch it quick.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I can stall for about 15 seconds. Tim Martinez from the bankers had planned to not be here today. Authorized me to tell you that they support these amendments.
Now, I wonder where Tim might be right
bill
now.
With the amendments.
I also know that the bill was co-sponsored by Senator Metzger. Do we know if he wanted to testify on the bill or?
His office knew about it, Madam Chairman. I don't know if
okay.
He...
I can at least offer some enlightenment as to the whereabouts of Mr. Martinez. He is at a reception. I think he may actually be planning on coming back at a reception for Mr. Knuckleby, who is retiring. He had his reception starting at 3 o'clock this afternoon.
Get your name. Is Mr. Knuckleby a golfer? Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't know.
Have you heard of Knuckleby Golf in
Scotland? Very nice try. We're getting rid of the. Let's get rid of the young kids on this committee, okay? Kind of an embarrassment today.
Want to state your name for the record, so when you officially, and then you can keep stammering. And as we're waiting for Miss Levitt, if she ever shows up, she's very happy.
I will. My name is Harold Scoggins, and I'm with Farley, Wada, and Witt. We're the outside counsel for the Credit Union Association of Oregon. And I will defer further comment until Ms. Levitt.
Good afternoon. Making.
Tell me the name of your company again.
Mine? Farley, Wada, and Witt. We're attorneys, and we're the outside counsel.
Wada, Witt. I really like that. I really like that.
We knew that would be the case, and that's why we did it.
Yes.
Ms. Levitt, would you like to enlighten us on the bill?
Thank you. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I am Pam Levitt with the Credit Union Association of Oregon, catching my breath. House Bill 2775 is a bill that we have been working on for over a year. It is something that we do each year. We ask our Oregon credit unions to review the Oregon Credit Union Act for any technical changes or amendments that they would like us to make during the legislative session. House Bill 2775 is a result of those discussions, as well as discussions with our regulator at the Department of Consumer and Business Services. The bill passed 50-0 on the House side, and we will be reviewing an amendment from the Oregon Bankers Association today, which we have accepted. I've spoken with each of you over the course of the last few months, and we have had several negotiations with the Oregon bankers on this bill, and happy to report to each of you that we've worked out an agreement and that the bill is to both our satisfaction with this amendment that they will be introducing. The main change in House Bill 2775 is the change in the member business lending cap. In 1998, Congress passed the Credit Union Membership Access Act, and this act placed several restrictions on member business loans that credit unions can make. Currently, in the Oregon Credit Union Act, there is a $100,000 cap. That is the main issue in the bill. The rest of it is all considered technical changes. Hal will go through a brief section by section for you to explain the rest of it.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. Ms. Levitt has provided you with my written testimony, and I'll just give you a brief summary of the various changes that are contained in the bill. It makes about five what I would call technical changes and one the member business loan change Ms. Levitt's already referred to. The first change actually is made at the request of and in consultation with the regulator. They have asked, and we believe that it's appropriate, to delete a current provision in the statute, which is RS 723.122, that requires the regulator to issue rules setting the amount of insurance that a credit union must carry. Instead, deleting this provision will leave that issue to the regulator's discretion based on safety and soundness and what the regulator believes is appropriate business practices. As a practical matter, they already do this anyway without need of actually going through a rulemaking process, and they can be more flexible without it. The second change updates some outdated language in RS 723.152, and it permits credit unions to offer certain products and financial services. Right now, that regulation is very specific and designates specific products and services that credit unions are able to offer in addition to share accounts and loans. And as technology changes, as the financial marketplace changes, credit unions and other financial service providers are constantly innovating, coming up with new ways to meet the needs of members, new delivery methods. And so we've asked to make this section a little more broad and simply allow us to offer products and services that are consistent with our mission as a credit union as set forth in ORS 723.006. This particular provision is the subject of the amendment that is the -2 amendment referred to earlier, and the association has agreed with substituting the wording of that amendment for the existing wording that's in the bill. The third change does two things to RS 723.152 subsection 20. It deletes the requirement to obtain regulator approval to hire accountants. We think it's part and parcel of the business of a credit union to have to hire accountants. We have to provide reports to shareholders and reports to the regulators and insurers already. And there's no need to have specific regulatory approval to have to hire accountants. It's just what we have to do. This also deletes a provision that authorizes credit unions to invest in a service corporation. That authority is already contained elsewhere in the statute, as well as the limitations on that authority. And this is simply a cleanup matter to eliminate a duplicate provision. Fourth, there's a glitch in the current statute that relates to payment of dividends or interest when an account is closed. Under the current statute, there's a specific way that the credit union is required to compute dividends, and that method does not always accurately reflect the way things happen in practice. This change will permit credit unions to pay accrued dividends when an account is closed at the rate that's currently in effect, as opposed to at the rate that was last declared by the board of directors of the credit union. In other words, if you walk in and close your account today and the current rate is 3.5% on accounts, and that was just upped from last month's rate of 3%, this will permit the credit union to pay at 3.5%, which is the current rate, instead of 3%, which is last month's rate, which is what the statute currently requires. And the last technical change is that this removes an outdated provision regarding dormant accounts that actually conflicts with the Federal Truth in Savings Law and the NCUA regulations that implement it. It takes out a provision that says that when an account becomes dormant, the credit union can simply move that money to a separate general ledger account that's not considered an account that's owned by the member, and can quit paying dividends on that account. There are not a lot of credit unions, as far as I know of, that are actually doing that in practice. And as I said, I think that conflicts with the Federal Truth in Savings Act, and so we'd just like to take that out. There is existing law elsewhere in the Unclaimed Property Act that deals with what the credit union has to do when money in an account actually becomes abandoned for the purposes of that act, and there's no point in confusing that with accounts that are dormant for the purposes of whether the credit union can assess fees or not. And then last but not least, this eliminates the arbitrary $100,000 cap on loans that credit unions can make to what I call non-natural person members, a corporation, a partnership, an LLC, a limited partnership, anything that's not a living and breathing human being. The current Oregon statute says that for those types of borrowers, a credit union can loan money to them, but only up to $100,000. Anybody who's done much lending in the farming area, or even to a company that's a general contractor, a mom and pop general contracting business, will know that $100,000 doesn't buy you much equipment or even many pickup trucks to operate that business. This limitation has put Oregon State Chartered Credit Unions at a disadvantage as opposed to federal credit unions, which are not subject to a $100,000 limit. And this change will leave Oregon State Chartered Credit Union subject to all of the other loan-to-one-borrower limitations that are in place. There are limitations as to how much the credit union can loan based on the credit union's net worth, based on the credit union's assets. And Oregon State Credit Unions will remain subject to all of the federal limitations that are applicable to business loans that credit unions can make to members. So what this really does is level the playing field between Oregon State Chartered Credit Unions and federal credit unions so that they can make loans that are to non-natural person members on the same terms and the same conditions. Under the federal loans, the federal rules that apply to member business loans, all of these loans have to be guaranteed by the principals of a business anyway, so we will continue to have personal liability for all of the business loans from the principals of the business. It's just that we'll actually be able to make a loan to the corporation itself or LLC or whatever that exceeds $100,000. And that's it. I'll be happy to answer any questions that the committee may have.
Okay. Any questions?
Senator Corcoran, are you awake?
No, it's been really intriguing. Just thinking about bingo, you know.
Mr. Chair, I need to declare a potential conflict of interest in that I serve as a member of the Albina Community Bank Board, and also I am a member of the Oregon Rails Federal Credit Union.
Thank you. Close public hearing. Open work session. House Bill 2775.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Deckard.
I would move House Bill 2775 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Deckard, mm-hmm. I would like to have an amendment.
Oh.
Adopted. That's the S2 amendment.
Is that the Banker's Amendment?
Yes, it is.
Can I rescind that motion?
I have not accepted that motion, so you don't have to rescind it.
I'd move the A2 amendment, Mr. Chair.
Senator Deckard moves the -A2 amendment into House Bill 2775. Any discussion on the motion? Objections? So ordered. Senator Deckard.
I move House Bill 2775 to the floor with a, as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Deckard moves House Bill 2775 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion? For the record, Senator Gorley's conflict of interest will be noted in the work session along with the public hearing. Any objections to the motion? Ordered.
Sure.
Senator Atkinson wants to carry the bill.
Thank you.
Close work session. Okay. We need about a 30-second break, you said, so you can tell me what's going on with that other one. I want to go here, but he said there might be a word problem.
And the bill. Here's the list. And Joe Bell wanted this to read just medical, nothing else. Because in current law, there's a single sentence and it talks about HVAC, comma, minimum, comma, boiler, comma, and goes on. But that wasn't in the amendment request that I sent down. But then when I heard about it, I called and said, I want line 19 to read only medical. Phone call. The amendment came back, it says medical equipment.
No, they haven't done anything else.
And she and Joe.
We did,
Meg and I chatted with
people
on the record. There was no intent whatsoever to change the meaning from current law because it's medical. And the word equipment is not to be viewed as any modifier for that word.
Okay. All right. Open work set, House Bill 2152.
Mr. Chairman, 2152 comes back to you with the -A5 amendments, which consolidate amendments that you had before. There were a couple of minor changes that fixed and clarified some language. There is one concern that has been brought up, and that is that on page 3 of the printed bill, on line 31, is the word vendor-specific medical equipment. The current language of the law lists a number of entities that are covered under limited energy technician, and that word, it just uses the word medical. It doesn't say medical equipment. When I heard about this request to have just medical on there, I phoned legislative counsel and asked them that line 31 have only the word medical on it. It came back and is in the -5 as medical equipment. I believe that is council's attempt to do what I said, but they left the word equipment on there. There was no intent with the amendment or with the original bill to have the word equipment modify medical in this sense. Mr. Brewer agrees with that interpretation, but I felt it important to put it on the record that that was certainly the intent of my request, and if the committee decides, that will be the intent of the committee with the amendment.
Okay. We have the dash A5 amendments in front of us that we could modify and remove the word equipment.
Yes, we can, and then bring it back, right?
No.
No?
No. Committee can make committee amendments, too.
Well, Mr. Chair, on I would move then that on page... I move that we suspend the rules
for purposes
of
conceptual amendment.
Committee amendment.
Conceptual committee amendment.
Senator Gordley moves the suspension of rules.
We need help. There's lots of it. Thank you.
Senator Gordley moves to suspend the rules for the purposes of amending the dash A5 amendments. Any objections? The order. Senator Gordley?
Okay. Mr. Chair, I move that on page 3, line 31, the word...
We're amending the amendment to remove the word equipment on page 15.
On page...
on page 1, line 15, okay, of the A5 amendment.
So moved.
Okay. Senator Gordley moves that we add the word equipment to the A5 amendment on page 15... page 1, line 15, so that the line 15 would then delete vendor-specific and the word equipment. Is there any discussion of the motion? Any objections? The order. We now have an amended amendment. The order.
Okay. Mr. Chair, I move the dash 5, A5 amendment. As amended.
Thank you. Senator Gordley moves the dash A5's amendment as amended by the committee to House Bill 2152. Is there any objections? The order.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 2152 A engrossed as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Gordley moves House Bill 2152 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Is there any objections? So, any volunteers to carry? Senator Corcoran will carry the bill. Close the work session. Do a work session on House Bill 2702.
Mr. Chairman, this bill was before the committee earlier with the dash 4 amendments. At that time, the Department of Justice and the proponents of the bill requested amendments. Basically, the amendments do three things. It makes clear that the statement of costs are to be estimated costs. It makes it clear that the services that are contracted for were contracted for by the provider. And the Department of Justice has requested language that basically says that the agreements, if I can paraphrase what's actually happening, that they're good for just what they say, that there's no implication that outside matters change those agreements in any way, except that they make reference to what is called the parole provision, which says that there are in fact some circumstances where the conditions under which the agreement was made can be brought into account if you go to court. there seemed to be no objection to any of these amendments by any of the parties that were party to the part.
Okay. Mr. Chair, I move the dash four amendment to
five.
Jetlag to House Bill 2702, A. and Gross.
Senator Gordley moves the dash A5 amendments into House Bill 2702A. Is there any discussion? Objections? So ordered. Senator Gordley, would you move the bill?
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 2702 as amended to the floor with the detached recommendation.
Senator Gordley moves House Bill 2702 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Objections? Done. Okay. Senator Gordley will carry the bill. Close work session. Okay, where are we?
3207.
Oh, yeah, 3207. Work session on 3207.
Mr. Chairman, the last time this bill was heard, Senator Harper wanted assurances that the bill did indeed allow facilities at allow the use of these bonds at facilities that were owned by a secular or religious institution. In response to that request, I contacted legislative counsel, talked to the attorney there that drafted the original bill. I also talked with Mr. Love, who is an attorney but does not practice law in this arena, but he told me that the lawyers for the bonding companies agree with that interpretation, and he opined that those are probably the most conservative lawyers there are. And finally, I talked to the Assistant Attorney General, who gives advice to the Oregon Health, Housing, Educational, and Cultural Facilities Authority, and she too agreed with the proposition that these funds can be used at religious property as long as the facility being constructed is not itself for religious or secular purposes. I then talked with Senator Harper, told him of my findings, and his comment was something to the effect, fine, I just wanted to be sure. Excuse me.
Okay. We are in work session.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Atkinson.
I would move House Bill 3207A to the floor of the due pass recommendation.
Senator Atkinson moves House Bill 3207A to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any further discussion? Any objections to the motion?
I'll object, Mr. Chair.
Senator Corcoran is recorded as an objection. So ordered. Okay. Senator Starr, would you like to carry that?
Carry that.
Yeah. Okay. Close work session. We'll now do a public hearing on House Bill 3359.
Mr. Putnam.
Madam Chairman, the basis of this bill is to give protection to brokers and dealers who fire somebody because they were a crook. And this limits their liability for being honest in their reports to the regulator.
Do we have a sign-up sheet?
Our new clerk.
Thank you. Cindy Robert and Martin.
No, that's me. Martin and Associates. Roger.
Martin and Associates. Okay.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, I think Keith's description was quite good. But let me tell you this. My name is Cindy Robert. I represent D.A. Davidson Company. It's a regional brokerage firm that is headquartered in Montana but has offices in Portland and in Bend. This is a really simple bill. It's already passed in Idaho, Montana, and Washington, and it passed the House in Oregon unanimously. Let me explain to you what it does. Right now, if an employee of a brokerage house is fired, the employer fills out a U-5 form, and the U-5 form goes to the National Association of Security Dealers. It's a self-regulatory group that was put together by security dealers. That form is then made available to other brokerage firms should they be interested in hiring a broker, and it's also available to all of you should you be interested in choosing a broker to use for your activities. The problem is that we have found that a lot of times when a broker is let go, a lawyer intervenes and says, do not fill out that form disparagingly or we will sue you for defamation of character. So many of the firms, even though this seems implausible, don't want to have to fight against that. So they are simply putting things on the firing statement that really aren't quite true, such as not a good fit, downsizing, location change, things like this. Instead of filling out the form as it should be filled out to protect all of us and other brokerage houses from just recycling the same bad brokers. So this currently you see a lot of undermining of what the policy is supposed to be for, and this law encourages truthful and candid reporting of why a brokerage firm has hired, fired a broker. We do have A3 amendments to it. I hope that you have those. They're a simple amendment. It includes in the definition after the word broker-dealer federally covered investment advisor, because as legislative counsel did the changes to the original bill, they put in state, not federally covered investment advisors. I will tell you that there was no opposition to this in the House, but in all honesty, I did do a gut and stuff, so you can't really expect people to show up there. However, I did make a point of going out to those who might be interested in finding out who opposed it in the other states and talking to them. There were no groups wanting to oppose this legislation. I will say that the Jim Harlan of Department of Consumer Business Services, Division of Insurance and Corporate Securities has helped me on this bill. It's been very helpful in making the language work for Oregon statute, and they are supportive of it as well. I believe he is here and could attest to that as well. Anyway, I'll answer any questions.
Mr. Chairman. Thank you. What was the situation that brought the issue forward?
Mr. Chair, Senator Gordley, there's been a number of situations, and it has become actually, I'd like to be able to pinpoint where it started, and I can actually provide you with an article on several instances where this has occurred, where lawyers are actually using this as a means of suing for defamation of character. Because it's not actually a federal form per the federal government. This is a group that the securities dealers put together themselves to regulate the industry. I'd be happy to provide you some of those stories. So, I have an article here.
I'd like to see it.
Okay.
Okay. Any other questions? Thank you. We have no one else signed up to testify. Is anyone else interested in testifying?
Well, we heard, Mr. Chair, that...
Mr. Harlan?
Yes.
Jay?
Well, I'd be happy to answer any questions.
No questions other than, are you okay with the bill?
We're aware of the bill.
Yeah, please.
Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, for the record, my name is Jim Harlan. I'm with the Department of Consumer and Business Services. As Ms. Robert testified, we have worked with her on this bill. We're aware of it, and we have no problems with it.
Okay. Thank you. Close the public hearing on House Bill 3359, and we'll just hold that one for a day or two so you can get your information.
Right.
Okay.
Just asking Ms. Robert to get the information to Senator Gardner.
Okay. All right. We need to figure out what we haven't done. We jumped around so much. Mm-hmm.
doing in the back.
Let's start with here. Okay, do work session on Senate Bill 334.
Oh, that's terrible. Are we moving this down?
Mr. Buck.
Mr. Chairman, this bill was before the committee earlier. At that time, Mr. Van Atta, who proposed the bill, asked for an amendment that changed, deleted the word or on page 2, line 9. In my request for counsel to remove that or, we received the information back that that was unnecessary and that the bill reads the way it should, and that the problem that Mr. Van Atta was trying to solve actually does not exist, according to counsel.
Okay. You have no amendments then?
That is correct. Oh, Mr. Chairman, you're calling my attention to the fact that on line 30 is an improper citation. Counsel called sheepishly and said they've already fixed that. Apparently, a bill goes through that fixes glitches in the drafting of the law, and they have already taken care of that, according to counsel.
Interesting. Okay.
A typing error from 15 years back, as near as I can tell.
Right. There's another beef.
Mr. Chair, I move Senate Bill 334 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Gordley moves Senate Bill 334 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Please call the roll.
Senator
Atkinson?
No. Senator
Corcoran?
Aye.
Senator Decker?
Yes.
Senator
Gordley?
Aye.
Senator Harper?
Mm-hmm.
Senator Starr?
Aye.
Having received the required number of votes, Senate Bill 334 goes before with a due pass recommendation. Anyone like to carry it? Senator Gordley will carry. Okay, let's go to a public hearing on House Bill 2630, a public hearing.
Why don't you introduce this bill to us first?
2630. House Bill 2630.
Mr. Chairman, 2630 is a bill out of the House of Representatives with no votes. And its purpose there was to allow public utilities to file balance sheets at the end of that utility's fiscal year. There are circumstances where PUC may also want them to file a calendar year report. Those provisions are left in the law. There are proposed numerous amendments to this. They are not ready. They are not done out of council. But if the chair wishes, I can tell you the essence of those amendments.
Why don't we let the gentleman in front of us tell us the amendments that they know them?
They do. They know
them. Chair Beyer, members of the committee, Sean Miller, I represent Pacific Corp, an electric utility that operates in Oregon as Pacific Power. I want to just restate the original intent of 2630. and then talk about some of the proposed amendments that we'll be bringing to you on Wednesday, I believe. 2630 was originally a bill to simply allow utilities like PacifiCorp to file a balance sheet, which is our financial information, which is required from us as a regulatory entity in front of the Public Utility Commission on a fiscal year basis. Quite simply, the statute requires a calendar year basis. Our business operates on a fiscal year basis. We wanted to, and as you can see in the bill, subsection 2, it just says if a public utility maintains on a fiscal year basis that we can file our information on that particular fiscal year instead of a calendar year. Public Utility Commission signed off on the bill, passed unanimously on the House side. It's mainly just a technical. There was some we did add a line on the House side that the commission may require additional information from the you know, when you're on a calendar year basis and you switch from a fiscal year basis, there might be a little transition period. We added language that we will provide them any information they need for that transition. And that's the genesis of 2630. The amendments that we will be bringing to you on Wednesday were a negotiated agreement that we've been working on all session regarding a bill you heard probably about a month and a half ago on Senate Bill 598. Which I'll Steve Vincent will touch on, but I'll let you know that was the bill on the 3% deferred accounting system that that we were considering raising, and Senator Gordley was kind enough to sit in on those negotiating sessions between the utilities, the electric and the gas utilities, and the customers to work out an agreement. And I'll say from the electric side, which is one of the main focuses of a negotiated agreement, we have come up with and conceptually, and that's what we want to make sure we get them right before we bring them to your committee, is the 3%, 0 to 3% deferred accounting will stay status quo. We have agreed to anything above 3% with a 6% cap, and this is electric utilities only. There will be a 6% cap on that. There is a new process and procedures for the customers to go through that process on the deferred accounting, and so they have agreed to allow us to be able to take that above 3% to 6% with more procedural protections for the customers written into that, and we will bring those to you and explain those in further detail at the next hearing. There'll also be a technical amendment on the cogeneration facility down in Klamath Falls. That is going into play as we speak, and the attorneys from the city of Klamath Falls, who I'll state Mark Nelson represents, brought this amendment to us just to clarify the relationship between entities like our power marketing side of our utility, which is the private side. It's not the public side of our company, and to allow cooperative arrangements between companies like ours and the city of Klamath Falls in that cogeneration facility. That'll be a small amendment, and we will explain that in further detail on Wednesday. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Steve Vincent with Vista Utilities. I guess I have nothing to say. He explained it all.
Including in the amendment to the language of Senate Bill 942.
Senate Bill 942 is the issue with
City of Eugene.
Yeah, EWEB's amendments will be in the draft that Legislative Council is working on right now.
Hey, hold on a second. We will suspend, or we will temporarily suspend the hearing on House Bill 2960. We will open a work session on Senate Bill 439. You don't have to leave. We won't be that long. Okay. Mr. Buckman, you want to present the bill to us?
Mr. Chairman, earlier you had this bill that would have reduced the Workers' Compensation Board from the current 5 members down to 3. Then no further action was taken by the committee, but we now have the -3 amendments, which changed the membership from 5 to 4. And after I sent the staff measure summary to you, we do have the fiscal analysis, and it shows a savings of $169,000 over the next biennium.
Okay. passing down. Is that? We have in our possession a letter signed by 7 members of the MLAT committee that states that they support this bill with the dash 3 amendments in it. So I don't know if the entire committee got that or not.
That's a copy, yeah.
Okay. I did. I should have shared with you. Okay. We have in front of us...
Mr. Chair, may I make a suggestion that you read the letter out loud for the record? It appears that we don't all have it.
Certainly. Actually, the letter is addressed to Governor Kitzhoffer. It's a courtesy copy sent to me and to the chair, the president of the Senate. Dear Governor Kitzhoffer, as you may know, the Management Labor Advisory Committee, MLAC, heard Senate Bill 439 twice, once in its original form and then as amended to reduce the board to 4 members. Although MLAC voted against the bill on both occasions, after further consideration, the below signed members have agreed to support the amended bill, which would eliminate 1 labor and 1 management position and add a public member. We believe this bill is in the best interest of the workers' compensation system. Thank you for your consideration. Sincerely, signed by Bob Shiprack, J.L. Wilson, who are the 2 chairs of MLAC, Michelle O'Rourke, Sherry Sundstrom, Ken Allen, Diane Jansen, and Lisa Trussell. Okay.
Mr. Chair, I'd move the dash 3 amendments.
Senator Atkinson moves the dash 3 amendments into Senate Bill 439. Is there discussion?
Mr. Chair.
Senator Corcoran.
Well, I don't think this is a big deal, but I'm not going to support it. I see that you gave us in the handout today an analysis of law changes creating spikes in board review workload. But I don't think it's a very fair analysis because Senate Bill 485 this time is actually designed to increase access to the workers' comp system. And so I'm a little concerned that at the same time we're doing that, we're decreasing the number on the board. But again, you know, with MLAC signing on, it clearly is a lot better than the 3-person construction to begin with. And I guess 4 is the compromise between 3 and 5, but I'm still probably going to be a no.
Okay.
Mr. Chair.
That's an important.
Thank you. I'm going to be voting no simply because I'm concerned about the workload issue, which may in fact become a big deal. And aside from that, I agree with the comments that have been made by Senator Corcoran.
Senator Durfler.
Yeah, I might go back just a little bit since I've been following this for about 10 years now. And I would tell you that the 3-member board that we had previous, I think we added the members back in 91, I guess. And actually, the 3-member board turned out more work than the 5-member board is doing presently. The workload has gone way down. If you talk to any of the members over, they will tell you that they don't have enough to do. Actually, I'd suggested a 3-member board to start with, but we changed that primarily because usually it takes the governor quite a while to appoint a new board member. And if you get down to 2, that makes it very difficult to operate. So we sort of compromised on the 4 because that always makes sure there's always 3 members there. So that gives you a labor management and a public member. Plus another public member. So 4 is really adequate to do the workload. Senate Bill 485 is not going to add near the number of cases that go before the board that they previously had in 1990. So I think you'd find that the 4-member board will be, actually still be a surplus of people to do the work.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
Who breaks the tie? It's 2-2.
This Senator Durfler probably knows more about this than I do, but my understanding is this board is not a traditional board in that sense.
Mm-hmm. Well, excuse me, again, I tell you that we did last session, appoint 1 of the board members as administrator. So the administrator really operates, kind of runs the agency itself. it's not just the board, it's all the hearings officers and so on along with it. So she's pretty good, busy just doing that, but it still leaves three full-time board members. And you have management labor and a public service, public member on that, that do the hearings. And like I say, they're far from being overworked. They are way underworked with the job. Claims have gone, you know, they have 40% fewer claims than they used to have just back in just a few years ago. So they have taken on additional duty doing some of the OSHA work because they didn't have enough to do. Actually, a three-member board could handle all the work they needed.
So, as a direct answer to your question, I don't believe this board meets to decide on these issues as a four-member board. Okay. We have a motion for amendments before us. A roll call vote on amendments. Please call the roll.
Senator Corcoran?
No.
Senator
Decker?
Aye.
Senator Gordon?
No.
Senator
Harper?
Senator
Starr? Aye.
Senator Atkinson?
Aye.
Chair Byers?
Senator Driftwood?
Aye.
Chair Byers?
Aye.
Motion carries. Mr. Chair, I would move the bill as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Atkinson moves Senate Bill 439 as amended by the committee to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any further discussion? Please call the roll.
Senator Decker?
No.
Senator Gordley?
No.
Senator Harper? Senator Starr?
Aye.
Senator Atkinson?
Aye.
Senator Corcoran?
No.
Senator Driftwood?
Aye.
Senator Byers?
Aye. Having received a required number of votes, the bill goes to the floor, and Senator Durfer will carry the bill.
Okay.
Close the work session. We will now reopen our public hearing on House Bill 2630.
We're not done with these guys yet.
Mr. Chair, we thought the Senate President came to listen to us.
Shouldn't do drugs in this process.
Okay, I think, Steve, we were ready for your testimony.
I think he gave it.
I'll just say, Steve Vinson with Avista Utilities. I'll just say that the market volatility in electric and natural gas in the wholesale markets, where our utilities buy natural gas or the electric utilities have to acquire electricity in the marketplace, that this bill, or once we amend it, will reflect some changes in flexibility and rate making authority by the PUC, and you know, give them the ability to address the volatility that each of the utilities is experiencing in the marketplace. I'll give you one real quick example. Avista Utilities operates in 5 states. We have electric distribution in Washington and Idaho, and of all of our load requirements, we only need to buy 10% on the market. We're 100 megawatts short in our own system to serve our customers, and it's costing us $1 million a day. And that little 10% piece has become pretty expensive. So we have huge deferrals out there. Our cash flows are out of sight, and we have debt. And what, now obviously this bill doesn't address that, that's another state, but what this bill will do is it will allow in-state utilities to begin to work off that debt at a faster rate. That 3% cap in statute says you can only change your rates by 3% of your annual gross revenues. Well, if that applied to us in Washington, Idaho, I don't know, it could take us decades to work off the debt we've incurred just in the last 12 months. So that's why I believe that this bill is necessary. And the same applies to the natural gas utility in Oregon. It's certainly not to that level of risk, but it is an important bill for the utilities. Thanks.
Thank you. Any questions? Okay. Close public hearing. We'll bring the bill back on Wednesday. Hopefully we'll have the amendments at that time that are correct and everybody loves, and we'll be ready to go. I think we've gotten through our entire agenda.
Okay.
You have to do it again.
Okay.
Can I have a committee's time?
So that's up to them?
Well, no.
Go ahead. No.
I've been asked that you mark your calendars for May 31, 5:30 or 6, something like that, for an event in Dayton, Oregon. And I'll get more information to your staff. This is at the request of prominent members of this committee.
Where's Dayton?
You don't know where Dayton is?
You don't know where Dayton is?
It's in your district.
I know where Tigard is.
Southwest of Tigard.
Where I think?
Yeah.
It's in my district.
Senator Gorley, do you know what place that this might be at? Do you know the famous place? Yeah. Have you ever eaten at the Palmer House?
I've heard of it, but I've not been there.
Let me tell you, members, from someone who lives 300 miles away, if this were to happen at the Palmer House, it is one of the finest dinners you'll get in Oregon. Mm-hmm. Specializes in mushrooms, isn't it?
Yes.
Wild mushrooms. Exactly.
Actually, the purveyor of that particular restaurant worked with Chris on the
mushroom
deal last year. Mm-hmm.
Yes, the Joel Palmer House will be the site of our committee party.
Mm-hmm.
So. Okay, and that is the 31st is the day it was chosen, I believe. Okay, thank you, committee members, for a job well done today. We got through about 15 bills in only an hour and 15 minutes.
Wow.
Adjourned.